everyone, and welcome to another episode of Double Shelix. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Sally. And today we are going to be talking about the 8 to 9 months that I was unemployed PhD, what I learned, how I ultimately found a job, how to manage the emotional and logistical aspects of this if you find yourself in a similar situation, and how to avoid being in this situation in the first place. And, you know, when I was digging through my email clutter from this time, I did uncover some archival poems that I wrote during kind of like on a tough day during this job hunt. Have I ever written poems outside of an assigned school assignment? No. Will I read these poems on this podcast at the end? Yes. Will they be good poems? No. Will it be good audio? Well, we will cut them if it isn't. So if you're hearing this, then they're in the end.
I think minus that we're going to have to live your emotional journey for you and like feel this is going to be a great episode.
We'll see. It's a little weird putting on the guest hat.
This is part of our post PhD path series. If you are in your PhD and thinking about a path afterward, I suggest you listen to our last few episodes. Today, Sally's on the hot seat. Okay, Sally, welcome to Double Shelix. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Sally, tell us a little bit about your job hunt, or maybe tell us about the end of your PhD and like what you were thinking about doing when you started to decide what direction you were going to go, and then actually getting into the leaving/applying process.
Right. So let's set the stage. February 7th, 2020. It's my due date for my baby. I clean up in my lab bench. I'm like, bye guys. Hopefully I'll have the baby soon and I won't be back. Because then it's going to be COVID and the labs are all going to shut down and we're all going to get COVID and we're all going to die. I didn't come back to lab. I ended up the last 6 months of my PhD was like a short maternity leave. Listen to our maternity leave episode for more details. It was a short maternity leave. And then 4 months of writing 2 papers, submitting 2 papers, writing my entire thesis, preparing for my exit seminar, which is the Thesis Defense of Berkeley, and defending my exit seminar in middle August. So during this time, I was also ostensibly applying to jobs, but as you can imagine, not many jobs were to apply thus for.
Yeah, it was a weird time.
It was a lot going on. And also like, I was doing what you're supposed to do, which is like reaching out to people and making those connections. But during this time, and I was able to reconnect with a lot of people from like grad students from my undergrad, people a few years ahead of me in my PhD. Like we always talk about how people just a few years ahead of you can be the most valuable contacts for your network, right? So I was doing everything that you're supposed to be doing, reaching out to people, doing a ton of interviews, or not doing a ton of like informational chats, seeing what was out there. And there was a few of like, many of those ended in like, oh my gosh, you seem great. We would love to have you apply, but we're not hiring this year. Which was a really tricky place to be.
Because you're like, well, thanks, but I'd like a job this year.
Right. And I should, before we get any further in this conversation, I guess I should say that I did have like a lot of privilege in this situation. I think we started to have mentioned this before on the podcast, but my husband has a real post-PhD role. And so he was making triple to quadruple a graduate student salary in the Bay Area. And so we were fine without my salary for that time. If we hadn't been, then I would have taken a postdoc maybe, or like really lowered the bar of what kind of jobs that I was applying to, which we can get into.
Well, this is an interesting direction. Let's go that direction.
Okay.
So Tell me like what you started off looking for.
I started off looking for research and development roles in large companies relating to material science or biomaterials and medical devices. So sometimes I would try to like spin it, like they're looking for someone with an expertise in, you know, in vitro diagnostics, but I know enough about this sort of in vitro space that I'm like, oh, if you want to make this sort of thing work, like I know they're playing around with gels and I know they're playing around with polymers because you know, or I would like spin it, you know, so anything that was sort of in that space. I applied to like some contact lens companies, some more traditional medical device manufacturing companies, also like some big tech companies in their material science team to like make Oculus or make like Apple phone screens, whatever. But I have to say that, you know, the farther in the R&D space for me personally, the farther afield I got from my thesis research, the harder it was to secure those even introduction first round interviews. So I kind of saw early on that like, yes, I could like create a story about how you could match my expertise with, you know, a role that's more afield. I obviously wasn't doing it very well to land those kinds of interviews, right? But things that were closer to my PhD research, like I would sometimes land like intro interviews or like technical interviews, etc.
Gotcha. Can I ask, you said you're looking for large companies and roles that were similar to what you're doing. What made you go the large company route?
I was open to startups, but having had many friends that work at startups, I know that at a large company, some of the things I was looking for outside of the position, like work-life balance or like not working with them, like stability, work-life balance, like not every big company is perfect, but the big company, it's a bell curve, right? And the big companies are going to fall mostly in the middle. And at startups, you could go really far toward the bad end in terms of working hours, in terms of pay, in terms of, you know, you move all the way across the country for a seed stage startup and it fails after you've been there a month.
You're really looking for stability and benefits.
Yeah. And also, to be honest, I was applying for large companies everywhere and I was applying for startups in the Bay Area. Because my thinking was, you know, I would move to a different city for something that has some sense of stability. And like, even if I didn't like my first role, I could move to a different role in the same company. But like, it just didn't make sense for me and my family to move all the way to Indianapolis for like a role at a super small company, which if it didn't work out, like then you're stuck in Indianapolis, which is great, but like we have no connections or anything there. So like, insert any city.
Yeah.
So that was where I was applying, large companies everywhere and startups in the Bay Area.
Start walking through the process.
Yeah, I guess there just weren't a ton of jobs out there.
Just to give some context, like how many jobs, new jobs that you hadn't applied for, were you able to find on an X unit of time?
Oh, I guess I probably ultimately applied for maybe 25 to 30 positions. I maybe could have done more if I was brought like better at it and like able to broaden my, like, you know, I guess now I follow a lot of influencers who like create, like help people find jobs, or maybe now the job market is different. So I have this impression looking back that I didn't do a very good job in my job hunt and that I could have been more efficient and I could have been like looking for jobs in a different way or using my network in a different way. And so I wonder if I was just bad at it or if it was just different in early 2020, because I did notice like, so starting the official job hunt like in August, around like when I did my defense, around I want to say Thanksgiving time, maybe I got better at looking for jobs or maybe things were opening up a little bit more, because that's when I started to get like more callbacks and more interviews and stuff like that.
I see. I mean, the timing certainly lines very well up with the major shutdown and other related economic crises. So,
yeah. And so I think maybe I just also got better at cover, like reading back on my early cover letters and resume, CV or resume that I would send out use a resume, not a CV, for if you're not in academia. But anyway, it's like reading your undergrad college application essay. It's just like, oh, cringe. Oh, cringe. Oh, why did I write this? Oh my gosh, what was I thinking? But maybe I also got better and learned to like personalize what I was saying to each role. I would try to read between the lines. Like in every startup that I applied to, I put lines in there like, you know, I have this podcast, so I know what it's like to build something from the ground up and to be all hands on deck and to like work really hard. You know, for large companies, I would put in a bunch of stuff about like, I have extensive experience collaborating with cross-functional groups to like drive key deliverables on a deadline. So like I learned kind of what to say. So I think that also helped.
Yeah.
As an engineer, like the whole process was very like low ROI. Like you put in all this time to apply to any given job for like the chance of maybe getting your application read. And I will say that of the jobs where I made it to like a second stage interview or more, let's break it down. Okay, so one of them, purely cold, purely applied online, made it to the final stage interview. One of them, like it was the startup and one of the co-founders was a professor. And it just so happened that like she and I had co-presented in the same session of a conference like 2 years ago. Like I knew her name was familiar and I'm like, where the heck have I seen this person? So I applied online, but she was like more of a silent co-founder. Like it was clear that she was the author of the paper, but she wasn't on the website. So what I did was I applied on the website. Mm-hmm. And then I emailed her and was like, we spoke at the same session of this conference in 20, whatever, whatever. And I just applied for this role. Like, if you have any more information, like, please let me know. And then she didn't respond, but like the co-founder, like the other co-founders, like emailed me back the next day. So it's clear that she like forwarded.
Yeah.
So that's probably a case where like having worked in the lab that I worked in, like she probably knew my PI is enough of a big name that she probably knew him and was like, oh, you're from this. So that's like probably what happened there. The job that I ended up getting, I heard about it from, like, it was on my medium length list of jobs to look into and consider applying for, because you can't, you know, you don't want to waste your time if it's like totally irrelevant. But then the person who is now my manager, turns out he did his undergrad in Berkeley. So he emailed the like Berkeley department and was like, please forward this to any PhD students. So like that admin in the department who forwards things to all the PhD students forwarded it. And I was like, this posting looks familiar. But then I had the hiring manager's email address, because that's so hard to find out who the actual person you're working for is going to be. And so I emailed him and he was like, apply online. So I like applied online, but I did get a call back from HR and go through the whole HR system. And then I didn't communicate with him again until it was like the final or like the second round interview with him. So one thing, if you're on a job hunt soon, this was confusing to me. The term hiring manager means the person who you will work for if you get the job. Like if you get the job, this person is your boss. It is not like the manager of HR hiring system.
I would not have known that. I did not know that until this moment.
When the person you talk to from HR in the phone screen is like, okay, great. Well, the next step would be a chat with the hiring manager. It means your future boss, not her current boss.
Gotcha. Cool.
Another one was where someone reached out to me directly via LinkedIn. And let's see, I'm trying to think if there's anywhere I like made to a later round. You know, I might've made to the later round and more, but it obviously didn't work out. So
these are some highlights.
They did not turn out to be highlights, but
fair.
Yeah. We can go into key lowest points in the lowest points soon.
Sally, I have so little concept for what it's like to find a job in industry. So please tell me and our listeners, what is the deal with phone screens? Tell us about what it's like to do a phone screen, what you wish you would have known, what you know now, and how it went for you.
Great question, because I wish I had known this when I had my first one. So basically, before they let the candidates talk to the person that's going to be their boss, HR will do a phone screen and just make sure that the candidate is on the same page. And like to just weed out people that are totally in the wrong place or that just don't have good vibes. And so as you do more and more of these, the phone screen will become easier for you and you'll learn what kind of questions they ask. It's usually pretty boilerplate. It's not a lot of opportunity for back and forth with the HR person because usually they're just writing down your answers or sometimes they ask if they can record the call and then reporting back. So you should be prepared to answer the phone questions. They are always going to ask, how far along are you in your job hunt? So they're trying to see, like, do you have offers on the table from other companies? Or are you like just getting started? Or are they going to have to like rush the process? Or like, do you need an answer in a week? And that's just not compatible with them.
How do you answer that?
Basically, through all the questions in the phone screen, your goal is to make a strong impression and to not eliminate yourself from contention. I was, for the most part, I was upfront about what stage in the process are you? I would say like, oh, I'm actively applying and actively job searching. I have a lot of, you know, irons in the fire right now. Some early stage like this, some later stage, except when I didn't have later stage, I didn't specifically say I have later stage ones. I wouldn't lie, but you know, showing that I'm actively searching. I have lots of irons in the fire, some early stage like this, some a little bit further along. And I would always end by saying, well, like once I learned how to answer this question in the beginning, I didn't know what I was doing. I would always end by saying something like, but you know, I'm aware that you have lots of other candidates. So if something moves really quickly with another company, like I of course will stay in close touch with you because I wouldn't want logistics to make me miss out on this opportunity. Or something that shows that like, I kind of know how the system works and like, yeah. They're also going to ask about salary expectations. Now in many states, including California, it's illegal for them to say, what do you make now? Grad students, never reveal that you make like 32K or however much.
That's really solid advice, I think.
Yeah, never reveal. Even if you're already in industry and you're already making 150, don't reveal. You can veer very well in your, like when they say, Sally, what are your salary expectations for this role? You can say, what is your budget? Or what is this? You can say either, what is your budget for this position? Or you can say, what is the salary range for this position? And again, like your goal of this conversation is to not eliminate yourself. So when they respond and they say like at this company, you know, scientists usually start out at around $105,000 a year plus bonus and benefits. Then your response to that is like, thank you for sharing that information. I would obviously need to refer, like I would obviously need to review like the entire compensation package holistically if we get to that point, but you know, no red flags here, like happy to, you know, that sounds in range of my research. Now, if they come back with a number that you know is really low, then you might say, oh, you know, I'm looking for roles that are a little bit higher than that based on XYZ. Is that something, you know, how does your team feel about that? Whatever. I would say at big companies, there's not a lot of wiggle room unless you have a hiring manager that's really going to go to bat for you. But at smaller companies, maybe they're just miscalibrated and you have their success, or maybe they're more cheap, or maybe they value the stock options where again, your answer should just be something like, I would want to review holistically the entire package because it's not just the salary. It's, you know, blah, blah, blah. The entire opportunity. So say something like that. They're also going to ask why you want this position. And you need to have an understanding of like why you want to do this kind of work and why you want to work at this specific company. The HR person doesn't really know anything about what it means to be like an R&D scientist supporting whatever research you're going to do, but they know a lot about the company. So being able in the phone screen to be like, I was reading online and AbbVie is consistently one of the greatest places to work. And I'm excited. Like, I think your dedication to patients is unparalleled in the pharmaceutical industry. You're like, go to the company's website and like, see what they're all about. If their website is all about how they're innovative, talk about how you love them because they're innovative. If their website is all about how they put the patients first and the patient experience, talk about how you want to help people and you love that they put patients first. Whatever their like mission is, you can find it. Make sure that gets across in the phone screen, your passion not only for like what you would be doing in the company, but also for the company itself. In phone screens, they're also going to ask you to like sum up your experience. So you need to be able to sum up your experience for someone that doesn't understand science very well, but they're not idiot. Like they have been doing this position in recruiting this and other people to this company for a long time. Don't talk to them like they're a child, but bring it down to that level of like peer, like adult communication about what you did. And it's not just about you synthesize this protein or whatever. It's about the teamwork and the collaboration. The more you can bring up those kinds of things, the better you're going to do.
And we did make a whole episode about basically giving your elevator pitch about your research. So if you're practicing for phone interviews, this will be a good time to check that out. But please continue, Sally.
Oh, also practice your answers out loud. This is so underrated. It's not that hard to figure out what they're going to ask you. It's the logistics questions I mentioned, and then like 2 to 3 more questions about the role and your experience specifically. And they're going to suss out, like, do you meet the criteria in the job posting? And are you like nice and a good person and a good collaborator and team member who will contribute to the team and to the organization? I can't stress enough, they really don't care about your number of papers.
Do you think that matters at all at this stage?
If you're in the door, I don't think, like, if you get to the like later interview stages, they're not going to pick you someone else over you because someone else had 5 papers. Now they might pick someone else over you because, you know, someone else like demonstrated research leadership across 5 different amazing collaborations and they were able to speak to it. But publications aren't, like in my job interviews, I talked about my work in Double Helix and my learnings through growing my own podcasting thing and like collaborating with Kayla and like having deep conversations with leading experts. So they knew that I'm the kind of person that they can like put in a room with strangers and I won't like embarrass them.
Yeah.
That sort of thing is especially important for roles where you're interfacing with customers. Like in my role, I don't interface with customers. I guess I'll like meet surgeons at conferences, but like it's not part of my day to day. But any kind of role like field application scientist, who is people that train customers how to use like the products that your company sells, marketing, anything like that. Like if you're interacting with customers, like you need to show that extra level of professionalism, consulting as well.
Okay. This is solid stuff.
Okay. So that's the phone screen. Did a lot of those. And then there's the talk with the hiring manager. This is usually similar, but they will get into your technical stuff more. And they will, this is where they're looking for, most of the questions are phrased as the following. Kayla, tell me about a time when you worked with a team to accomplish a goal in a hard deadline. Or like there's a million versions of these questions. So they're going to be asking you about, tell us about a time when, and they're going to look for key attributes in your answer. So the structure, you can Google, I think there's plenty of online resources about how to answer these questions. Some of them use like the acronym STAR, like the situation, the task, but basically you want to set the stage in a few sentences. Like when I was in grad school, I was working in a collaborative project with surgeons. Then you can say like, what was the kind of conflict or the key hurdle? Then you say the action that you did, like I saw whatever wasn't going right. And so to improve the communication of the team, like I implemented XYZ system, all while making sure that my boss was in the loop. And so that if anything went wrong, he wouldn't be surprised or whatever. And then you have to say the result. Okay, Kayla and I, we talk about this all the time. Like, you always have to say the result. So like, because of this action, the team was able to come from behind where we were behind on all of our deliverables. But because of the action that I took with me and my co-teammate, and we like changed all these systems. And now we ended up finishing on time and we ended up having 2 publications from this project instead of 1, or like whatever was the result. So this structure of like, set the stage, say what the conflict was, say what the action was, say what the result was, that's going to be the structure for a lot of your, what they call like, I don't know what the word is, like personality assessment interviews. Okay. Here's another tip for understanding what kind of questions they're going to ask about. This is especially true at big companies. So if you go to the website of a big company, you can usually find where they're like, at AbbVie, they're called the ways we work. So there's five kind of core principles of AbbVie. Every company has these, and you can kind of read between the lines or find them online, figure what they are, and then figure out what kind of narratives from your experience you can create to talk about each of these. But I did know that they all wanted to know about situations, and they usually asked about conflict, teamwork, and deadlines were really common ones. So I was always ready to go. Like when I would do an interview on video cam or on the phone, I would like have a list next to me of like, just reminding like the time I had to fire a master's student, or like the time that my collaborator got into a fight with the IACUC people. And I was totally freaked out because I was worried that they would like pull our protocol. Having those kind of tough situations that I navigated well, or that I can speak about well, even if like the result wasn't that successful, and what I would learn or do different next time, which they might ask about, having those ready to go in a phone screen and a real interview was like real clutch, guys. That's because it's hard. Like Kayla, if I were to say like, Kayla, tell me about a time when you really pushed the envelope in your creative thinking and you came up with something that was really totally new. Like, tell me the scenario, tell me how it went down.
Yeah. I'd have to poll for a little bit before I answered that. Yeah.
And it's totally fine to be like, let me think about that. But you can't think about it for like 20 minutes.
Right. That'd be a little awkward. You sort of implied that you went into this not knowing what you were doing. Were there resources along the way that you gathered that help you figure out like a lot of these core principles, shall we call them, of interviewing? Or were you just learning from experience?
The interviewing stuff, learning from experience. Because it's like, you know, I can collect the data. Like I got a call back for this one and I didn't get a call back for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the other resource that helped me was, I remember a past guest, Fatou Fall, who worked for Rora, which is a startup that helps people negotiate their compensation. And so I worked with them on the job search process. They were able to provide resources more about like how to use your network effectively, which I like was kind of the kick in the pants I needed to not be scared to reach out to people.
Mm.
So that helped me. But in terms of the interviewing, like it was just stuff I read online, but then mostly just learning in the hot seat and realizing that like there's totally a hidden curriculum, like so much of the stuff we talk about on this podcast. Oh, going back to the phone screen, another question that they're going to ask is, what is your timeline to start? And this is another one where, again, like you don't want to put yourself out of the running. So don't lie, but you know, you can say, oh, like, when are you looking to hire? And they're probably almost always going to say as soon as possible. So if you're like not looking to graduate until X time, you need to say, yeah, so my original thinking since I'm early in a hunt was that I would search for positions this summer and be able to begin a new opportunity in the early fall. But, you know, if something comes that's a dream position or that's impossible to pass up, I'm sure my advisor would be amenable to some sort of arrangement. So you just don't lie, okay? But don't put yourself out of the running.
And what about in these early stages, what about technical questions?
Maybe this is different at other companies. Like when Sarah mentioned that, okay. So Sarah, one of our past guests, Sarah Kang, she mentioned that, you know, at her role in Genentech, at the technical talk, they always have someone in the room that's going to ask the killer questions. The technical stuff is probably going to come out. If you're looking for a scientist role, they will likely have you give a talk about what you did in your PhD. And this is where you'll get the technical questions. I never got any questions like, why did you choose this length of peg? You know, but I would get questions like, why did you choose peg as the molecule for this? I got a lot of questions like, if you started this project over from the beginning, what would you do differently? Which it's like, I feel like like any PhD student could talk about that for a month.
Yeah.
So it's not like, it's just an opportunity to show that you like learned technically from the process and that you like grew as a scientist in doing the process, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is also the nature of the roles in the companies that I was targeting. And since they weren't all like, I made bioadhesives and I only had one interview with an adhesives company. And even there, like their technical questions, they were like, why did you choose a lap shear test to measure the adhesive strength of your adhesive? And I was like, there's no such thing as a super great test to measure your adhesive. And there's pros and cons for all of them. And the reason that I chose lap shear for this one is because blah, 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 blah. Another one that would have been beneficial would have been blah, 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 blah. But given the limitations, we weren't able to implement. So it's like technical question. Like I did get questions about my PhD work, but I was always able to knock it out of the park because like I've been thinking about it for 6 years.
Got it. Okay.
Which may be different in like electrical engineering roles where you're like really pulling from that one class you took about compilers or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we're building to, you know, you do the phone screen, you do the chitty chat with the hiring manager, and then you do your all day interview, which is usually not all day. And for me, it was never in person.
Sign of the times.
The in-person all day interview. It's a two-way street. Okay. You as a candidate need to figure out if you want to work with these people and on this team. And you go back to our next level mentorship for mentees and mentors episode for more info about like what kind of questions to ask to get to the heart of what it's like on the team. And we'll say this all day interview, it'll usually be one-on-one or like one on 4 to 5 conversations, like you with between 1 to 5 other people. And there will be usually a technical talk where you're either asked to prepare something specific. I did one where they asked me to prepare a presentation about how a CAR T cell therapy works, which isn't something that I knew about at all.
Was that intentional that they gave you something you didn't know a lot about or have a lot of background in just to test you?
Yeah. And that was a role where a lot of your job, where a lot of my position would have been interacting with customers and helping customers sync up their ongoing research and development operations into like the framework of this company's software product. And so you have to be able to talk to a customer. You have to be able to, like, if I were to get a, like the idea is if I were to get a customer who's working on CAR T cell therapy and I'm trying to like hook them into our system, that I would be able to like understand quickly what CAR T cell therapy is, explain to my team what their key challenges are. And then like part of the assignment was like to provide a suggestion about like 3 different ways that this company's product could help this team.
I see. Interesting.
And so I think for those kinds of roles, I think too many companies out there are asking PhD graduates to deliver a talk on their thesis research when they really should be asking them for a different kind of assignment that more directly assesses the school, the skills that they'll need in the role, because most post-PhD roles aren't in R&D. So people use that as like hiring teams use that as a crutch, like, oh, Kayla, give a talk about your research, when it could have been more useful to be like, oh, Kayla, show us that you can communicate with others. Oh, Kayla, demonstrate that you can blah, blah, blah.
Sally, this is golden information for anyone going through interview process. I've never heard any of this. I mean, I also haven't really searched for an industry job, but like, it's amazing to me that I've gotten through this much of work and haven't encountered this information. Anyway, okay. So you're going through this, you're like learning how to be a successful interviewer. But when you're going through a job hunt, it can be very emotionally trying. So I wonder if you would share with us any of the downs in the process and like how your best failures and how you navigated it, those moments.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, there was a lot of run of the mill failures. Like you have an interview with the hiring manager, it goes well, but they don't hire you or they don't invite you for the all day interview. And for most of those, I was like, you know what? I truly don't know enough about polymer chemistry to succeed in this role, like developing new polymers for contact lenses. So like, that's fair, whatever. But for me, the key traumas were like when you made it so close to the end and then it's like, oh, so one of them was for a rotational program. So it's like they hire a bunch of PhD students, or like not a bunch, like maybe 15, I don't know. And then you like join the company for, usually they're between like 2 and 4 years, and you do between like 2 and 4 rotations at different sites in the company. And usually these are huge companies. So it could be like all over the country or all over the world in different roles. So you do like 2 years as a, like you do 18 months as an R&D scientist, 18 months in quality assurance, and 18 months in regulatory. And then when you're done, you're like on the fast track to be a future leader at this company. So in this interview process, like I obviously made it through the resume stage. I aced the, or well, I made it through the, this was an interesting one, phone screen virtual, where there's like a software and you like record yourself answering the questions.
What?
Oh yeah. So instead of like, instead of answering that boilerplate questions to an HR person, you like log in at any time, like over the next week. And then they say, okay, do a practice question where you like, they answer a question, you talk for 2 minutes, and then you can like review the video. And then, so to like see how it works, and you say go, and then it will like show a question on the screen. You have 90 seconds to think, and then you have 2 minutes to record yourself saying the answer.
How often did you encounter a screen like this?
That was only once for this.
That feels so impersonal.
It was honestly very efficient because I could do it whenever I wanted. I didn't have to schedule it. Mm-hmm. And like for the person watching the answers, they could like easily
watch whenever, I guess. Yeah.
So I made it through that phone screen. And then I made it. And then since it was like a rotational program, they had people who were like current or recent alum of this program that are still with their company. And they like had a one-on-one with me to be like, here's what it's going to be like in the all day interview. So then I had that little sesh learned. And then they also, which was great, they provided feedback on your virtual interview to say like, and they were like, honestly, we don't have any feedback for you. You did amazing. And I was like, okay.
Like, thanks guys. But what now? Okay.
Yeah. But honestly, like there's so few opportunities to get feedback. Kudos to that organization. Hiring teams should seek to give feedback to candidates whenever possible, just because there's like literally no opportunity to get any. So then I do the all day interview. From my perspective, it goes like super great. I'm like, this is going to be great. I'm going to get this. Like, and also there's a bunch of us. And so they even said like, we don't want to say that we're going to hire all of you, but like statistically we have a between 10 to 15 people in this program per year. And there's like 12 of you in the room. So it's pretty clear. Like, as long as you don't F it up, like you're in. Yeah. And then like, this is on like a Thursday. And then like on Monday they reply and they're like, sorry, we didn't pick you.
Wow. That cuts deep.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It cut fucking deep, man. Like I cried. And I had another interview like that day. So it was, yeah, with a different, so I like was in a bad space mentally.
Yeah.
They did give feedback about why I wasn't picked, which is great. Like, you know, as I mentioned, there's so few opportunities to get that kind of feedback. So they responded and they were like, thank you so much for doing the interview. But we found that there's other candidates whose background more closely matches. And then they did say like, if you have any questions, please reach out. We would be happy to pass along feedback from the leadership team on potential areas of future growth in appreciation of your time and effort throughout this process. So I thought that was great. And I was like, thank you so much. Like I had a great experience and I'm open to any feedback. Okay. So basically they sent this feedback, which was mostly like, oh, you're like, it was, you know, you start with the positive stuff and then you get into the real issue. Some leadership team members were concerned that there may be a need for additional development and sensitivity to others in a team environment and being direct in conflict situations.
What?
And I'm like, okay, yeah. And so again, like I responded and there was like preamble and postamble, but that's like the nut of it, right? And so I responded and I was like, thank you so much. Like, I really appreciate this. Like, not very many companies like provide this kind of feedback. So blah, blah, blah. I was very appreciative and whatever. But at the same time, like, I've gotten developmental feedback before, right? About many things, but never about...
Too direct in conflict?
I mean, I've gotten feedback, like, I'm a direct person, but I don't think that causes conflict.
Yeah.
But maybe it does, and I just don't even notice.
I would think that that would be a benefit in conflict, but...
Then I was, like, totally questioning myself, and it's like, what could I have said that, like, made them... like get this impression of me, because I like, I don't, but then it's also like, I don't want to be the person who's like, I got this feedback and I don't think it's true, you know?
Yeah. I get what you're saying.
And then, oh, basically it was like devastating being told like basically everyone gets it. And then being the one that like doesn't get it was like,
yeah. Also, I guess emotionally, I don't know if it's better to know or not to know why you don't like to get the feedback.
I certainly emphasized in future interviews, did not emphasize directness.
Yeah. I could see at the same time that being a very like culture specific situation to a certain team. And then you could like overcompensate, potentially go to another team where they maybe really value this kind of like directness that was maybe off-putting to that team, and then they question that maybe you're too soft or something. So
yeah, or like if you're in a team where everyone is direct, you have to play the game, and in a team where no one is, then you would stand up. Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, that sucked. Another one was for a startup company. And I actually made it through the technical interview. It was quite well aligned with my thesis work. I actually got a job offer. And then I was like very excited. And, you know, I had gotten the advice, especially for small companies, like run the job offer by other people in your network to see what they say about it. And I did. And I was able to reach out to like 5, 4, 6, something like that, startup founders that I know in this space and be like, here's a job offer I got. What do you guys think? And they all like, cause it was a position where I would be the first scientist. So the team would have been like some academics, a business person, like a CSO type, and me. And they all kind of shared what they thought. And they're like, salary, this is fair, but the options and this like is a question mark here. So then because I got the feedback from multiple people that like the options package didn't line up for a first scientist role, I attempted to politely bring it up with the company and say like, I really appreciate the offer, blah, 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 but maybe like this package is a little bit off base because the risk of being such an early stage company isn't really offset by the benefits. Like, how are you guys thinking about this? Like, you know, it's not just me to consider, like I have a baby, it would be a big move across the country and blah, 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 blah. And obviously, maybe I was too direct in a conflict situation because I said, like, how can you, like, what do you guys think? Where are you moving on this? And they were like, we want to move on. I don't think this is going to be a good fit. So was it like, you know, woman tries to negotiate, get shafted situation? Was it like, I got advice from like the wrong people who said like, I would give my first scientist X number of options and your number of options is 1/10 of that? Was it me being direct? And this was like around the same time as the other one. So yeah, that was a real tough one. Cause again, it's like so much like, self-questioning and like, what did I do wrong? And I should have just accepted the offer. And then I could like finally have a job, and like, I shouldn't have been complaining and I shouldn't have asked for more. But then it's like, was it on them? Or was it like, they didn't want to have a scientist that has a baby? Cause I did, like, I was, my daughter was not on social media and not on this podcast and not anywhere during my job hunt. But I did, like, once I had a written offer for the two companies, like the job I have now and this other job, I was like, oh, well, you know, it's not just me to consider, like, I have a baby, blah, blah, blah. So even if that's not what was the case, it's like so much like self-questioning.
With disclosing your parenthood status, why choose to do it then?
Like, I'm not going to risk my livelihood and test the waters in the interview stage. Okay. But like at this job, I was like, oh, blah, blah, I have a baby, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, like, there's great. Here's some resources for parents at this company. Like, oh, so-and-so is on maternity leave because we have maternity leave here. You know, it's like some positive data in that direction. So I think like that was my, and you may choose to disclose early. You may choose to disclose when you get to day one, and you may choose to never talk about your kids ever.
Back to these pretty devastating moments in your job hunt. How did you handle this? What did you do?
Crying. And then at least for the one, it was one where I'd broken my rule about looking only at targets in the Bay Area. So like in hindsight, like I'm glad that I didn't move my family across the country for a seed stage startup. So those are some of the low points. Also the different companies, man, the different recruitment processes are so different. And some of them are really bad just in terms of like HR follow-up and like communication about expectations and next steps. And some of them, I want to give a shout out to the company that was literally the best, most efficient, most smooth, and most pleasant recruiting process, where I thought all the questions they asked and all the deliverables that they had were like extremely well aligned with the role. So huge shout out to the company Benchling. A lot of people like from our PhD program work there. So huge shout out to Benchling. It seems like they would be an amazing place to work. I also feel guilty because it came down to continuing in the next round interview with Benchling, or like I had to accept the job that I have now. And so I ended up like having to be like, I'm so sorry. Like, I need to take this job. I've been unemployed for 8 months. Like, I can't tell them, like, they wouldn't, like the company I work for now wouldn't accept like a maybe or like a pause, which is fine. And I think I'm happy where I am. And like, I'm happy doing R&D, and the Benchling role wouldn't have been R&D. But Benchling's recruitment process was like 12 out of 10. Shout out to Benchling.
Hashtag unsponsored.
Yeah, they can pay us and we'll make a whole episode, Benchling, and we can put one of your people like that we know that work there in the episode. But unsponsored shout out, just because so many of these companies had bad.
Yeah. I mean, again, I haven't gone through this process myself, but I've definitely heard plenty of horror stories of being ghosted at random times, or yeah, just terrible things.
Yeah. And also, like, that's part of, you know, being a candidate is like, you don't want to be the candidate ghoster or like whatever. And I can also shout out, you know, there were some like things that didn't end in a position, but still felt really good. Like Sarah Kang, one of our recent podcast guests, I actually interviewed for a position on her team, and I passed the HR screen and I met with the hiring manager, and they ultimately went in a different role with in a different direction, just because like I literally have no experience doing like what they do. So I was honored to even make it to the hiring stage. And the manager told me, Sally, it's a 100% personality match, and I would love to be able to create a role for you on this team, but it's just not going to work out because like it's a small team and we can't like bring on someone that doesn't actually know what we do.
And at least you know why, you really know why.
Right. And she, like, even in the interview, she was like, normally I wouldn't have even interviewed you because you don't have experience in XYZ, but you had like made such a great, you know, blah, 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 blah. So it's like, as much as you can do as a hiring person to like set the expectation and like set the goalposts.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking maybe we could move into your success story.
Oh yeah. So I work at AbbVie. It's a big company. It's a big pharmaceutical company. It was phone screen with HR. Like a month later, it was phone screen with the hiring manager. few weeks later, it was an all-day virtual interview where I interviewed with, I gave a technical talk about my work, which went well. It's all about clear communication. Like, it's not about how many graphs you show. It's about whether they understand the ones that you do. So just be judicious about that. Mm. I had an interview with like my boss's boss. I had an interview with the interim. My boss's co-manager was on vacation or was on maternity leave. Not vacation, very different. So I interviewed with like her, you know, interim replacement. I interviewed with the people on the team, like my peers in like a group. And then I interviewed with my boss. And again, it was all the kinds of questions that I told you about, like, tell me about a situation when, blah, 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 blah. The technical questions, again, they were just about my PhD work. So I could easily answer them to the satisfaction of the audience. And when I didn't know, I was just like, I don't know. That's a great question. Yeah, I joined in May 2021. So that was after finishing my thesis in August 2020. So August, September. And then, you know, I still had concerns like move my whole family far away. What if it sucked? You know, there's not as much opportunity as there is in academia to like really suss out like the personality of the boss. And I mean, I love the work that I do. So I'm happy. And it's a great organization. So
if you could go back to your August 2020 self and tell yourself one thing to do differently, what would it be?
Spend less time looking for jobs, because like not that many new jobs come online. And so like if I had just like did 5 hours a day instead of like 9 hours a day, it probably wouldn't have been that different. And so much of it was like, I could have optimized by like spending less time perfecting that cold email and just sending it. Yeah. And then I would have spent more time chilling, but it's again, like it was 2020. Like what would I have done? Like chilled on the patio instead of in my house. Cause you can't go anywhere. Cause then you're going to get COVID and you can't do anything. Cause everyone has COVID and you can't.
Yeah. Not to mention, I could imagine that would be stressful too. So
I'm reading through our episode outline and we've covered everything except the bad poems action item.
I was just going to ask. So you made it. Are you ready to emotionally pull this out?
No, but I never will be.
Okay, well, also, listeners, this is your warning. It's about to get raw and there will be some adult language. Sally, go ahead.
One day in the depths of all this, it was like, I was having all these feelings and like trying to talk to my husband. He's like, I'm in a meeting. I mean, he didn't say like that. He was nice, but he's like in a meeting. So I can't like tell him my... And I was just feeling so sad. I felt emotional. I was like, I need to move. And so I like wrote these poems about my job search. And I haven't looked at them. I mean, I've read them since I wrote them. And I told Kayla, like, can you believe I wrote these dumb poems? And then she's like, you have to do them on the podcast. But I didn't want to, like, I want the cringe factor to be fresh. So I haven't read them in like 8 months.
I've been waiting for this for so long.
Okay, so some of these are going to relate to anecdotes that you guys have heard in the episode. And scrolling through some of them, I might cry. Some of them are going to relate to things you haven't heard about, but because you'll be able to pick up the story that I'm talking about from context clues and figure out what happened. Okay, some of them have titles, some of them don't. And I haven't been a poetry reader since I was an award-winning poetry reader in sixth grade.
Congrats.
I did speech team and I like would win prizes for reading poems, but those poems were written by other people, not like me on my worst day, which was January 20th, 2021.
We have an email record.
Yeah. Oh,
man. I'm so sorry you went through this day.
Okay, but you guys can listen to these poems. People have probably turned off the episode.
I think they've been waiting through the whole episode for this moment.
Okay, here we go. But here's the first one. It doesn't have a title. I know that you sent the email using that delay feature so the bad news wouldn't get to me until after the weekend, but you weren't the only one. So Monday at 5 a.m. PST really fucking sucks. That was inspired by a time when I woke up to two rejection emails on the same Monday morning that were both sent at like 5 a.m.
Oh, that's so painfully true. Okay, please. Continue.
Okay, here's another one. I think you'll know which one this was about. Everyone says women don't negotiate. I have told so many women to negotiate. You won't get what you don't ask for. So when the offer was meh, and everyone agreed it was meh, of course I negotiated. We will not prepare a revised offer at this time. Well, fuck, now what? So that was about when I like tried to negotiate and like, was it my fault? Was it their fault, et cetera.
The punchline is superb, I must say. Thank you. It's really on point.
Now this one, I haven't told about this story yet because I totally forgot about it. Here we go. Fun fact. This one's called fun fact. Fun fact. Sharing a fun fact is never fun. Like in a group interview with the other finalists, and one person, a man, of course, says that his fun fact is that he has a 3-month-old. So fun, all agree. Ha ha, no sleep, ha ha, how great that you are here, ha ha. Then two other women share that they also have babies. I don't normally share this, but since we're all talking about our babies, yeah, girl, we don't normally share this to protect ourselves. I have a little baby too. Her crib is covered with a blanket in my Zoom background. So I can seem ready, able, willing, unburdened. I never talk about her in professional settings or social media. I hate that doing so will limit my job prospects. She is the most fun thing in my life ever. I've gotten really into bird watching during the pandemic. What a fun fact. So that was about a time when this guy said he had a baby and then everyone else like, we has a baby too. And I was like, no.
You were like, I like bird watching.
Yeah. Because like motherhood penalty, fatherhood bonus, right? Like,
yeah. No, I feel that. You just never know how it's going to land. So you just don't want to risk it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's another one. Again, no title. This one.
I'm psyched. Okay.
The thing about the pandemic is that there's so much shit happening to so many people that when bad stuff happens to me, I feel imposter syndrome about my own suffering.
These are really deep, Sally.
It was a very emotional time, Kayla.
These are really deep. These are really, like, I feel like that one could apply to so, so many moments for so many people.
Yeah.
Okay, please.
Okay.
What do you got for us?
This one does have a title. It's a little short and sweet. It's called Job Requirements. Job Requirements. Oh, look. A list of stuff I'm not an expert in.
That's like almost haiku level.
Yeah, it's not the right syllables, but it's like the similar vibes. Haiku inspired.
Yeah. Yeah, haiku adjacent maybe. That's good.
Then I was like, I just wrote all these poems like in one go, probably took me like 90 minutes or less. So I must have read back on the list of poems. Because here comes the next poem. No title. Probably I should make a poem that is slightly less depressing. So I will just say that I am so proud that in the last 6 months, I delivered my baby girl, wrote my entire dissertation, submitted my dissertation and 2 papers, and got my PhD. Kind of a big deal. I'm really proud of that. I'm an amazing mom. I wish I could walk across the stage with her.
I know.
But I forgot to say, part of the reason that we did this episode is because I talked about my unemployment as part of the my graduation speech or the commencement speech.
Listeners, Sally was the commencement star for our commencement. And it like 3 years worth of commencement.
2020, which is 2020 through 2022.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
3 years worth of commencements.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 3 years worth of commencement star speaker right here. You're listening.
Well,
yeah.
It was amazing. The Berkeley Engineering PhD commencement from 2020 through now. And in my speech, I talk about like being unemployed and for after my PhD and feeling like I didn't deserve to celebrate because I didn't even have a job. And then I talked about how if any one of the other fellow graduates like is in that same position, like please know that you're amazing and that you deserve to be here. And that just because you haven't found your next position yet doesn't mean that your PhD was a failure and doesn't mean anything and that you're going to make it. And so that's what I wrote in my speech. And that's who the committee picked me. So we knew that it was sort of a resonant topic, which is why we made this episode. Also, I think Kayla just wanted to hear these poems.
I definitely did.
Okay, there's only one more.
Definitely worth it. Oh, yes, I thought we were out.
No, there's only one more.
Okay.
Oh, this one must have been from a different day. Because, you'll see. The first line is, it's a new day, but... Okay, so we can read the poem. Again, doesn't have a title. It's a new day, but just hopped on to say, 100% personality match what the hiring manager said. I mean, I still probably won't get it because, like, I don't actually know anything about microphysical systems, but it would be a super awesome job and I would do a good job. So that was a poem I obviously wrote after this day that really sucked. And
yeah,
before I was officially rejected from the job at Genentech.
You know, I think you could have an alternate career here.
Yeah.
Job-related, job-themed poetry.
Well, think it, like I said, I haven't read these in like almost a year because I didn't want to back out of having to read them on the podcast. but now that I'm in industry, like I'm like reading these and I'm thinking about a whole new genre of poems that's like exclusively industry speak.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my bad job poems. I don't know. Maybe the listeners are now rooting for my career to go into another phase of crisis so that I can get more content out there. But
I mean, I would not root for you to suffer, but should that happen, this was the good that came out of it, I'd say. I think it will be very emotionally encouraging to a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, being unemployed. And also then everyone's like, oh, what are you doing now that you're finished your PhD? And you're like, nothing. And then in interviews, they're like, oh, I see you finished in August. What have you been doing? So I just said I was finishing on wrapping up some publications and working on my podcast so that I wouldn't be like, I'm literally applying to jobs. Like, I don't have a job. I'm unemployed, guys. So anyway, listeners, I hope that me bearing my trauma has benefited you all.
This has been real. This has been so real. I do think that there is a lot of very pro tips that you have shared in this podcast, in addition to some very real solidarity for anyone that's about to or currently going through or reliving their job hunt.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what our podcast is all about, right? It's like sharing the journeys of others that have gone before and giving you tools to make that journey yourself.
Yeah. Do you want to shameless plug anything?
We do this in every episode and it didn't even occur to me that like-
I know. But this is your chance because we don't usually shamelessly plug for ourselves.
I know. It's like, should I do a TV show? Should I do a location?
I mean, I could shamelessly plug for you, to be honest.
I'll do one and then you should do one. Okay.
Okay, let's see if the one you do is what I was thinking of for you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I would like to shamelessly plug the concept where you have a day off, your partner has a day off, and your kids' daycare is open. This has never happened in the history of our relationship. Well, I guess my daughter's life. But for the first time ever, this is happening on Monday as my company and my husband's company have a day off in observance of Juneteenth. And my daughter's daycare has not gotten with the times and will still be open on Juneteenth. So she will be going to daycare. My husband and I will be going on a hike. We will be going to a restaurant, probably one that serves food in extremely hot pans that come to the table. And so you can't bring a toddler, but the food is so good. It's a Korean place. So we might go, and it's like, we might like go after the hike. So it'll be at like 3 p.m., but like, that's okay. Daycare's open until 6. And we're going to send her to daycare and we're going to do our own thing.
Shout out.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's really good.
What's yours?
I was going to shamelessly plug for you bird watching.
Oh, get a binoculars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bird watching. So you read it in my poems or like you listen to it in my poems. When we were in Berkeley, we lived 1 mile from Albany Bulb, which is like a tidal basin of the San Francisco Bay, which has incredible avian wildlife. And we would go on a walk there almost every day. I got to say the birds are not great there between like June and July. They all go, a a lot of them go to Alaska to breed, but don't worry, they'll be back. There's plenty there even in the summer. Yeah. And I guess if you're in Orange County and you want to go bird watching or LA, like I'll drive, they have good birds there. Let me know, like, even if you don't know me and we can hang out in person.
Yeah. That'd be great.
No, like, I'm serious. Like, we don't have, like, we just moved here. Like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to meet people in a new place in a pandemic.
Well, and like in grad school, right? There's like built-in people. Like, we're friends because we're great and you're great and I'm great and we are like mutually great, but we also like rotated in the same rotation and like spend a bunch of time together and like took the same classes. Anyway.
So thank you, Sally, for sharing your deep wisdom and your very raw journey with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. And I look forward to you being the next victim in a future episode. We have some good ones planned, like first year as postdoc. Well, our most popular episode ever is first year as faculty. So we're like, we follow the data. So we're going to have first year in industry and first year as postdoc. So those are coming.
Mm-hmm. And an episode that I'm looking forward to, which is our anti-CVs.
Oh, wow. Well, for our failure resume, we can just cut this whole episode in there as the first half. And then...
Oh, I got lots more.
Kayla, you apply to a lot more stuff than me because you're like very motivated. So I think a big part of my failure CV is like not applying to enough stuff.
I have lots of failures to show for that. So we can talk about that sometime.
Great. Well,
yeah.
Listeners, please share this episode with anyone that you know who may be soon embarking on a job hunt and who is in the depths of it right now, because you will get a job eventually, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't sort of suck in the end. And that's okay. Like, you're not alone if you feel like it kind of sucks. Please subscribe to this podcast on your podcast platform of choice. Leave us 5 stars or 6 if that's an option for you. You can email us your feedback, doubleshelixpodcast@gmail.com. We actually got the sweetest letter from a listener recently who said, I am on my 3rd annual re-listening of your How to Succeed in Your Summer Internship episode as I drive across the country to my new summer internship. And this listener apparently listens to that episode every summer, and this is their 3rd time doing it. So that's a great
episode. And it made our days.
It made our week, honestly.
It did. Yeah. All right.
Great.
Thanks for listening.